I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. Welcome to Eastlake. Look in your notes. The big idea this weekend is how to stop making excuses and handle my responsibilities. Every weekend when you come here, we look at some story about Jesus most of the time, trying to find out who he is, what did he do, and what difference does it make in my life. There's four books in the Bible that are stories about Jesus. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. All these men wrote different stories about Jesus from their perspective. We're looking at the story written by Mark. And Mark had some help writing the book from a man named Peter. He's famous for being Saint Peter. And some people think that he was the person that started the very first Christian church. He was handpicked by Jesus in the very beginning to be one of the first guys. He was the first team that Jesus picked. And he saw all the events of Jesus' life. And so the whole story Peter saw. So when you read the book of Mark, it's not like revelation to somebody God or something like guesswork. It's history. It's the whole story of Jesus that somebody saw. And Peter tells Mark about this story about Jesus. They write this book. Now, here's the thing about Peter. All of his life, he struggles with handling his responsibilities. At one part, he's very good friends with Jesus. And right before Jesus goes to the cross, this big mob comes and gets him. And they're going to arrest him. And they come to Peter and say, hey, do you know that guy? They point to Jesus. And Peter says, never met him. Of course, he'd been with him closely for 3 years. They were best of friends. And, you know, when's the last time in your life you really, really needed somebody and you just were like really sure they were going to come through for you and they didn't? You're like, not this person. I mean, this is the person I thought for sure if I ever need, and they didn't. That was Peter. All of his life he struggled with how do I handle my responsibilities. And today we're going to take a look at a story right in the beginning of Mark. So tell your friends and family you're curious about Jesus, best place to come, good place to come, because we're just going to like walk through this story. And today we're going to look at a lesson and how I move from making lots and lots of excuses to having responsibilities. So look at it right there in your notes. We'll just start reading. As soon as they left the synagogue, now that's the Jewish church. So now remember when Jesus started, he picks his team. He picks all people that don't go to church. So if you've ever wondered, can I do something for God? Can God use me? But I haven't really gone to church very much. Well, when Jesus picks his team, he picks everyone. Nobody, they're all ex-churchgoers. And so they're probably a little surprised when the very first thing Jesus does is he hauls them back into church. And last time we were here, we talked about it was the very first time that Jesus ever preaches his sermon. He's got his group with him. They're all thinking, gosh, Lord, why are you bringing us back to church? We tried church our whole life. It never mattered. But here was his point. Church will be way different when I'm there. So if you got friends, family, or maybe even for you, and you might have felt it today, when worship and singing is just more than like singing, you just can feel the presence of the Lord, and you're like, wow, something's different about church, and that's the whole reason we get together. And so Rick takes them to church. It'll be different because I'm there. And church is always different. Family gatherings are always different. My job is always different. Arguments are always different. Raising my kids is always different when Jesus is there. So he takes them all to church, and he preaches his sermon, and remember, it was like the theme of it was he almost got stopped before he started, which can happen, but it didn't. And so now they're leaving church. They're on their way back from church, and let's see what happens. They went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. So I don't know if you know anybody like Donna Lee or Billy Joe. Simon is Simon Peter. He's got one of those type of names, so it's really Peter. And his brother Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So here they go. They're going to have a party. So if you like to have parties, the Christian church is a place for you. So they're all going to have this party at Peter's house, and it's all arranged. I'm sure the mom stayed home, and she's going to get all the food ready. They're going to have like the big, big thing after church. And they get there, and they find out, why? Where's the cold drinks, and where's the food, and how come nothing's ready and everything? It's like, here's the thing. When I'm not able to handle my responsibilities, it impacts people besides just me. Now, maybe you know somebody, and this is their famous saying, I can do whatever I want with my life. It's my life. I can do whatever I want. And if I want to, the only person I'm hurting is myself. And of course, that's not true. Because my behavior is attached to so many different people. And if I'm not able to handle my responsibilities, it causes a lot of things. Remember, all these guys, they've been in church, and they're hungry. We're going to have a big party. It's going to be awesome. Cold keg, and it's going to be great. We're going to get there. And they walk up, and they're like, well, now what do we do? And maybe you've been there before where, like, you're counting on someone. They have some responsibilities they have to do, and they don't pull it off. And they're like, well, what's the big deal? And you're like, it's a big deal to me, man. Because you didn't do what you said you were going to do. That has impacted me. Where I work at, they've made all kinds of different changes. I'm a salesman. That's my day job. And they make all these changes where I work at. And I don't know about you, but never anybody ever comes and asks me. The boss never says, hey, before we make any changes, we'd like to get your take on it because we wouldn't want to affect you. Never. You know, so all these changes, they change the processes, and there's these new systems and all these new responsibilities they want me to do. And guess what? I don't like them. I don't think they're necessary. It means more effort than I want to put out. I don't even care for the changes they're making. I don't even want to do them. There are all these new responsibilities. But here's the problem. I have a new manager. And this new manager has always been very fair with me at work. He's always had my back. And from the very first time I started there, he's just like sort of been in my corner. So now I have this new manager as part of the changes. And I could care less about the changes. The truth is, if I don't go along with the changes, if I don't carry out my responsibilities, it's not going to be any real big deal to me. But here's the problems. Here's how they grade his performance. Can he get his team to handle the new responsibilities? So even though I don't think they're necessary, and even though I think they're stupid, and even though it takes more effort than I want to put out, I'm going to do it. Because I don't want to hurt that guy. In fact, my goal is to help that guy. Now here's my point. Here's the how-to. I have to remember that responsibilities, mine, are always attached to someone. Because it's very easy to be irresponsible when I just think, what's the big deal? But if I can remember in my mind, wait a minute, it's not just about doing these new procedures. If I don't do this, this manager is going to be in trouble, and it may cost him his job. So if you can always keep a person attached to the responsibility. That's lesson number one. And so they get there, and I don't know if this ever happens to you, but they get there and they go, Jesus, Jesus, they rush to Jesus. Jesus, Jesus, you know, somebody called in sick. I don't know, do you ever have anybody at work that just conveniently call in sick at just the right time? We're all going to do inventory and stay late, and it seems like every time there's inventory, they call in sick. New powder up in the mountains, they call in sick. You know, how often do you call in sick? And here's the question. You see them rushing up to Jesus. It's like a little plan. They rush up to Jesus and, Jesus, Jesus, but you know, I mean, it's not our fault. Somebody called into sick. And you always have to wonder, are they making an excuse or is it a legitimate reason? Who do you know at work? And every time they call in sick, you say to yourself, yeah, right. They always have a bad back after they've made quota on their sales. They're never here after they hit their numbers. And it just seems like it might be an excuse. And how do you know the difference? How can you tell the difference if someone's making an excuse or they're giving you a legitimate reason? And here's the mind blower. It has nothing to do with content. It has nothing to do with the truth of the story. The difference between an excuse and a reason is motivation. It's my attitude, not my actions. Here's the thing. If the only reason I'm telling it to you is I don't want to get in trouble, I want you to excuse me, then it doesn't matter if it's true or not, it's an excuse. Because if the goal of my communication is I don't want to get in trouble, then that's an excuse. So if they're running up to Jesus, 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 you know, you're the Lord and everything, and we don't want to get in trouble because we were supposed to have a really cool party for you, then that's just an excuse. And here's what's confusing and can be, if you're like me, you know, you like have ready-made excuses in your mind all the time. You don't want to get in trouble. And so you're always kind of just, you know how it is when you tell excuses. They just get bigger and they're just kind of perfectly shaped so you don't get in trouble. And you're saying things all the time to people. And then what's so awkward is when you have a legitimate one, when something really happened and you come home and you're supposed to be home at 6 o'clock to go out to dinner and you're going to have a date night and see the movie and you get a flat tire and you come home and you go, babe, and there's, oh, I don't know, have you ever had this happen? When you really have a real story and it's not a lie, and there's this like quiet delight inside, whew, this time I've got an airtight story that's really true. This is awesome to really not be lying. So you know when you tell me, you say, babe, what happened was is I got a flat tire on the way home. And then, of course, you know, my wife's always like, yeah. Because it's not hitting for some reason. Because the only really my motivation is I just don't want to get in trouble. Here's the difference. If the only reason If the reason I have my story, regardless of the content, is I don't want to get in trouble with my wife, babe, you don't understand. This time is true. I really had a flare. Babe, you're not, I'm not kidding. I have a video of it this time, babe, and a witness. I got his number. You can call him. I got his number. He stopped and helped, and she's just there, and she goes old school on you. You know, the talk to the hand thing. You're like, babe, you don't understand. I got his phone number. I've got the video. She's just, because when someone has an attitude that they just don't want to get in trouble, it doesn't matter how true their story is. And maybe you've been through that in a relationship where they come up with these great things and you check it out. You hire a private investigator and you find out, wow, the whole thing's true. It still doesn't ring true for you. Why? Because they didn't care about you in the first place. They just didn't want to get in trouble. Here's the difference. An excuse, my attitude is I don't want to get in trouble. A reason is I want you to understand so you don't feel troubled. And they're very different. So if you want to know, if you just need to know sometimes, well, am I making an excuse or reason? Just ask yourself this question. Here's how you find out. Is my main concern I don't want to get in trouble because it doesn't matter about the content. But if my main concern is I want you to understand so you have less trouble. That's a reason. And so we don't know what happens here, but all of a sudden they come to Jesus and they, you know, let's see what happens. They tell her, someone called in sick, Jesus, and then we keep going. So he went to her, took her by the hand and helped her up. The fever left her and she immediately begins to wait on them. And this seems like just such a physical, simple gesture. I mean, it's such a simple physical gesture. Jesus just goes up and takes her by the hand and lifts her up and she's healed. And I just do want to say this, though, that for some of us, physical touch is not simple. It's complicated. And I just want to take an aside just for a moment so you understand that physical things matter to Jesus. Because here's the truth. I know we all grow up and we come through junior high and high school and we go out, we get drunk, and we get with people physically, and it's confusing because it seems like a lot of times that's all we want. It's very, very physical. Then other times we're not even comfortable in our own skin, and it's this very physical world that goes on. But here's the honest to God truth for most of us. The shameful things, the embarrassing things, the things that we never want to talk about, there's a physical element to them. And those are the things we lock away in the basement, in the dark basement, way in the corner. We don't want to talk about them. The best we can hope for is they never come up. We don't, oh my God, I don't want to ever see that person again. I don't want to think about that again. That is the truth. And Jesus didn't have to be physical here. He just could have been across from him and said, hey girl, get up out of that bed, man. You know, he could have just done that. But he demonstrates that he knows how to deal with physical stuff. And so I just wanted to tell you, I just a commercial for Jesus right now, that if you have, and we all do, the physical stuff in your life that you're still not okay with, he cares about that stuff. And it matters to him. And he's not embarrassed by it. And he's not intimidated by our shame, and it matters to him. And he can be something for you and all that stuff. And so he gets this girl up out of bed. And we get the first glimpse in the story if it's an excuse or a reason, because when you see what she does, she immediately begins to step back into her responsibilities. And here's something I've noticed in my life. Just because you remove the obstacles in my life, it doesn't mean that I'll start to be responsible. It's like, oh, after the holidays, then, you know, as soon as we get through the holidays, I'm going to go on a diet. And I don't. As soon as things settle down at work, as soon as it settles down at work and everything, then I'm going to be there and we're going to hang out and everything, and I don't. Next paycheck, as soon as I get my next paycheck, then I'm going to pay you back, and I don't. Here's one of the ways you know that this girl is not giving an excuse and it's a reason. As soon as God removes the obstacle, she steps into her responsibility. And maybe, let me just speak for myself, maybe one of the reasons Jesus doesn't heal me sometimes, you know, make everything better like that, is because he knows that if he removes the obstacles, I'm not going to change anyways. I don't have any intent. In fact, I kind of like the fact there's an obstacle there, because then it means I don't have to change. And Jesus, he's smart about that kind of stuff. You know why? Because he doesn't want to be a bailout God. He doesn't want us to get him confused with the genie in the bottle. You know, you just, whenever you need Jesus, just grab the ball, make a wish, I'm your genie God. He doesn't want that kind of relationship, because no relationships are healthy when they're that one-sided. And so maybe sometimes he just doesn't heal us at all. There's an obstacle there. Or on the bright side, like for this girl, if you do have an obstacle in your life and you really do want to do something, how am I going to go back to school? I don't have the money. I've got all these crazy kids running around. Jesus can remove that obstacle. How am I ever going to pay off all this debt? I'm buried. Jesus can remove that obstacle. Well, what obstacle do you need Jesus to remove if you're ever going to be able to be responsible and do what you want to do? Because on the bright side, he can do that. And in this story, she gets up and she immediately steps back in and she just steps into responsibilities. And here comes the party. It's going to do it. They call it a servant's heart. Just right there, someone in your notes, just servant's heart. I'll tell you what it is. I got this manager at work the other day. We're talking about this rich guy that owns this company, and he seemed a little depressed. And I told him, I said, oh, he seems a little down today. He's not down today. He goes, rich people are always happy. And I thought, what? You know, that's a statement that history doesn't support. Rich people are always happy. Here's who's always happy. People with a servant's heart are always happy. Not rich people. When your heart is tuned towards serving others, and here's why, there's a degree in contentment when your focus isn't on yourself. Now write these words down. Here's some good words to write down. The first word is goals. The challenge cycle. Because when you're serving, you're in the middle of the challenge cycle. The first word is goals, and the second word is plan, and the third word is effort, and the fourth word is results. Because the truth is, when I'm rowing the boat, I don't have as much time to complain about the boat. If I'm just sitting in the boat and I let you row the boat and I let you, why are you rowing this boat so fast? Why are you rowing the boat so slow? You splashed me. I don't like my seat here. This boat's too skinny. This boat's too big. The water's cold. That's what happens when you don't row the boat. But if you're rowing the boat with a servant's heart, or people that row the boat without a servant's heart, how come I have this stupid job? I always get stuck with the bad paddle. I'm going to always be rowing this boat. But with a servant's heart, life's a challenge. And we were meant to live in challenge. And when you're living in challenge, you're always in this cycle. Wow, what's my plan? Whoa, how am I going to do this? I have to put out a lot of effort. What's the results here? And here we go again. You just constantly are in motion. And that's this woman, because she could have got up out of that bed and said, oh man, that was a lot to go through. Somebody else get this party going here. Obviously, she's not that kind of person. Now, let's keep reading right down below. That evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases that evening. Now, this is interesting. In the Jewish culture, these people are all Jewish, and in the Jewish culture, they had these religious rules, and one of the religious rules was called the Sabbath. So the Sabbath, whenever this is the Sabbath, definition of Sabbath, whenever the sun went down on Friday night, the Sabbath started, and whenever it set on Saturday, the Sabbath was over. For that period of time, there was a Sabbath, and there was rules for the Sabbath. There were certain things you couldn't do on the Sabbath. There was church rules on the Sabbath. You can't do these things. So there's still, this is interesting, these people don't go to church anymore even, but they're still following the church rules, and they obey them when evening after sunset. See that little line there? So they wait. They're still following the church rules. And because in their culture, this is going to be interesting for us, in their culture, there wasn't much difference between the church and the regular culture. There wasn't much difference in that. And there's a lot of places like that. I have people that come to Utah and they visit or they live here for a while. This place is so stupid. All these places are closed on Sunday. You got to go to those little tiny ripoff places and buy alcohol. What a stupid place. Because, I mean, honestly, our culture and our religious rules here are pretty tied in together in Utah. They really are. And lots of cultures are that way, by the way, lots of places. And they were here. These are people who don't even go to church anymore, but they still have rules in the culture that the church set up. And if you don't like those about here, you'll just have to deal with them. I will say one thing for you. If you think this place is so stupid, it's hard to love some place that you think is stupid. Really hard. It's hard to like living somewhere that you think is stupid. So the best thing you can do here is going to be, yeah, there's lots of rules that came into our culture because of church and religion, and now they're here now, and there's lots of places like that. And this particular rule, and by the way, not all the rules that come from churches are bad. This Sabbath rule, this was like, okay, you're going to take this period of time and focus on your relationship with God. And doesn't every relationship need that? I mean, every girl in this room that's married or has a boyfriend or anything else would say, I would love to have one day a week where he just focuses on me and we focus on our relationship and those little words that all guys hate to hear, and we could talk. It's like all guys are like, oh, I got to work overtime that night. I mean, because it's just hard for us. But I mean, you know, most of us would say that every relationship, parents, kids, every relationship benefits when there's focused time. And that's what the Sabbath was. It's saying you just fly around in life. You'll never even think about God. So there's going to be this concentrated time where you'll just think about God. You and God work on your relationship during that time. They called it Sabbath. There's nothing wrong with that. But here was the problem. The church took this relational principle and they turned it into religious leverage. And so they made up all these rules of what you could do on the Sabbath and what you couldn't do on the Sabbath, and then you'd get in trouble and you had to pay fines because you did something wrong on the Sabbath. And pretty soon it didn't have anything to do with God at all. It had everything to do with the church. And so it wasn't to motivate people in their relationship with God. It was to manipulate people. And how do you know the difference? I'm manipulating you if I'm most concerned with my best interest. So you may think you're manipulating or motivating your wife or your child or your people at work. Just ask yourself this question. If you want to know, walk with Jesus, you can be honest enough to do this with your relationships. Just ask yourself from time to time, whose best interest do I really have in mind? Because if it's yours, then maybe you're not motivating them. Maybe you're manipulating them. And the church had gotten that way. The religious leaders had got that way. Even worse, the church, run up by the church, the church had become most important. And so the people, they don't like that. And so pretty soon as they possibly could, they just bail out on church and they don't go anymore. And then they see Jesus. They're like, wow, he is so different. He's not trying to manipulate us at all. He doesn't even talk about those type of things. And in this story, it says that they brought him these people that were sick. They must have thought something about him because they gather at the door and they bring him all these various diseases, circle that. And here's the question I have for you. Isn't there a lot of different ways of being sick? You don't have to raise your hand, but just who's been sick this winter some way? I mean, physical sicknesses, emotional sicknesses, is it crazy? There are so many different ways of being sick. There's a lot of various ways of being sick. Maybe you know someone right now and they're sick, they're struggling. And you might know somebody else and it's a completely different way. Lots and lots of different ways of feeling and being sick. And something about Jesus, they bring them all to Jesus. You can imagine the pressure he must have been under. Can you imagine? You think you're having a party at somebody's house. And all of a sudden it says, Jesus, there's some people to see. And you come out, there's like 100 people in the line with every single on the stretcher, in the wheelchair, in convulsions, this person over here, hair all gone. You're like, Jesus must have thought, whew, this is going to be a lot. And these various types of sicknesses that they all have, because there is so many, I was thinking about it when I read this story this week. I said, I don't know why it is. I always feel like the stuff my sicknesses are always just a little bit more special than other people's. A friend of mine told me years ago, I was complaining about my life, and he said, you act like your problems are more special than other people's problems. And then I started thinking about it because, it's when people say this, well, you didn't have to grow up in the family that I grow up in. You know, you don't have the kind of in-laws that I have because my wife's family. You don't have the crazy kind of kids that I have. You didn't have to have like 5 boys or whatever it is. Sometimes you can make your problems, not like various ones, but like the most special ones. My problems are more special than other people's problems. And I notice when I do that, I almost feel like my problems are better or worse than other people. And so here's why I wanted to say it. It's very easy to give myself a pass on responsibilities when my sickness is just worse than yours. My problems are worse than yours. My childhoods are worse than yours. My boss is worse than yours. It's just easy to go, well, come on. Don't be so hard on yourself. Because what you're going through, is way worse than everybody else. And catch this right here. Here's Jesus' attitude. Problems are problems to him. They're all the same. They're various. And so from time to time, if you feel just a little special, because I think sometimes, you know, you want to feel a little special. It's like, my problems are really, really super special. They're not. You're just a Joe bag of donuts like everybody else. You got just regular various problems. And the good news is he can heal each and every one of them. And so you see the story here. He also drove out many demons, but they wouldn't let the demons speak because they knew who he was. And then let's turn to the next page. And for the barn now. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off into a solitary place where he prayed. And so here's what happens here. So the party has all these people get healed, and the next day, when everybody else is probably sleeping, what do you do after all-night partying? Anybody here get up early and pray? Maybe not. But Jesus was. And so it's an all-night party, and Jesus is sort of tired. And I wanted to ask you this question. How do you recharge your batteries? Because this has been quite a day for Jesus. Can you think about this? He's in church. He's going to preach his first sermon. A guy needs to be healed. He gets through that. Then he's on the way home. Man, I'm going to get to have a cold drink and have a party and everything. He gets home. Jesus, somebody called in sick. There's nobody to be there. Maybe hint, hint. Jesus, somebody called in sick. Jesus, miracle worker, person that can make it all better. He's like, okay, you know, come here, girl. Get up out of the bed, you know. And then the party goes on. Knock, 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 knock. Jesus, we hate to interrupt the party, but there's like 600 people out here that have a lot of crap going on. You know, and so then he's like, okay, let's take care of that. And the party's going on. And then the next morning, do you think his batteries might have run a little low? How's your battery doing? Because here's something you need to know. When your batteries are low, it is so, when you are convinced that you're tired and your batteries are low, it is so easy to be irresponsible and not be there for your children or your spouse or your boss or when your batteries are low, it is so easy. It's so convincing. What are you talking about, man? I'm beat. Go out and throw the ball with you. Are you crazy? Go throw the ball against the wall. I'm tired. And you have to figure out how to recharge your batteries. And people do it all different ways. Some people go to Wendover to recharge their batteries because they can't afford to go to Las Vegas. Some people go up to the mountains to recharge their batteries. Some people go right to the couch with the remote. They're going to recharge their batteries over there all day long, recharge their batteries. But here is one thing I want to ask. Is the way that you recharge your batteries, is it working? And here's how you know. That after your batteries are recharged, look what happens here. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone's looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let's go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also." Here's how you know your batteries have been recharged. You're refreshed and you can be recommitted to your responsibilities. Not just I got a break from life. You're refreshed and you can be recommitted. Here's Jesus. Batteries low. Spend some time with the Lord. He says, okay, fellas, let's get going, man. There's more stuff to do with more people. So just ask yourself the question. However you recharge, however that is, could be, and there's nothing wrong with the different things I described. That's fine. But does it actually recharge your batteries? The other day I went to bed. I have the same routine every single night. I take my cell phone. I have a little table by my bed. And I plug my cell phone in, and it recharges overnight. And so, you know, every single night, same thing. Cell phone, in it goes. And I usually listen to a book as I'm going to sleep, so I got the earbuds in, and I'm listening to a book. And right now I'm listening to Watership Down, this book about these little rabbits, and anyways, you don't care about that. But anyway, so I got the phone is there, and so it recharges, right? And so I get up in the morning and do my stuff, grab my phone, I'm off to work. I get to work, I turn it on, and there's no battery there. I can't even make one call. It's like the first thing pops up. You've got a really super low battery. I'm like, what the heck? I'm playing back in my mind. How'd that happen? I did the same thing every night. Well, I get back there in the night, I look, and somebody who will be going nameless, my wife, had unplugged it or something. And so when I plugged it in, it didn't recharge my phone. I thought it was recharged. I did the same thing I always do, but somebody who we won't even name, but you can guess who it is, because I only sleep with one person, they somehow had unplugged it or something, and I didn't have a charge on my phone. But I thought I did. And I couldn't do any of the things that I needed to do. How do you recharge? And after you've recharged, can you do the things that you need to do? I'm not saying drop all the other stuff, but maybe you need to realign, because here's Jesus, and he goes to God first instead of people. Let's finish the story. Let's go to the other places nearby, visiting priests there also. That is why I have come. So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching their synagogues and driving out demons. So this is interesting too, because they come and they say to him, there's all kinds of people are back, Jesus. Everybody's looking for you. And Jesus says, I'm not going to go back and help those people. And how would you feel if you're Peter? There's like 100 or 200 more people at your house, and they're all waiting for Jesus. Maybe these people didn't go the first time. It's like, come on, we're going to go see Jesus. He's supposed to be really something. We're going to go see him. And like, blah, blah, Jesus. What's all the hubbub about that guy? And then they see some of the healings the next day, and they're like, whoa, I better go check this guy out. So then they go over to the house, and they're all ready. And they're thinking, okay, we're going to see Jesus now. And Peter comes and says, Jesus, there's a bigger crowd. This thing's really working. This tour is going somewhere. You're going to be something, Jesus. There's more people. He says, no, those people missed their turn. That doesn't sound like a very nice thing to say. That doesn't seem very nice for Peter to come and say, Jesus, more people need you. And he said, there's some other people I'm going to go be with. It's their turn now. And God does have a timetable. And there is a window of opportunity. And I know that might be hard to think, because you might be thinking, well, Jesus is sort of like a genie God. And like whenever I rub the bottle, he comes out and asks me what my wish is. And that's the God I want, but that's not the God you can have. He's not waiting somewhere. Are you ready? Are you ready? Give me the word. Are you ready? I'm just waiting around for you. It's a relationship. And some people missed out. And so can I. So can you. What window of opportunity are you looking into right now, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting? You're like the Eskimo that's having a conversation with his stove. He goes over to the stove, and he opens the door, and he says, you give me heat, I'll give you wood. Nothing happens at all. Opportunities pass. So let's make some application. Number one, the challenge cycle. They're going to put it up here so you can see it. There it is right there, the challenge cycle. It goes around and around and around. My friend said, I don't like it because it goes around and around and around. But that's what life does. It goes around and around and around. And there's an energy in that cycle right there. There's an energy. And part of life is understanding that to take responsibility in life, to be responsible in life, that you have to step into a servant's heart, and that happens. And you rearrange your goals, and you make a new plan, and you put out new effort, and you get results, and it's not even the end of the world to fail, because it just starts you in the process again. And in life, with a servant's heart, that's what life can look like. You're just constantly moving through challenges with your kids and with your health and with people. That's what life looks like, with employees that you don't like and employees that you do like, and, oh, that relationship didn't work out, and this one's good. There's life right there. That's life. We were created by God to live that way. It's the challenge cycle. And when you live that way, you don't get all caught up in making excuses. You can handle your responsibilities. And then number two in your notes is the window of opportunity. When Clarice and I first got married, we lived in this apartment complex, and there was this guy a little bit younger than us that lived below us. He was always telling me about this company that he went to work for. I had seen the company before. We lived in Seattle. This company had a building. He's always telling me about how great this company is. This company is going to be fantastic. I can't believe my job. He said, I work at Microsoft. Well, I'd heard about Microsoft. Everybody had kind of seen Microsoft. It was this little company that was coming up in the area that we lived in, and we had heard about it, and it was just a private little company owned by these guys. He's like, he's Robin, you got to go to work there, because you can't believe this company's going someplace. And keep all the time, I'll say, Microsoft, Microsoft, Microsoft. I'm like, broken record with your Microsoft. And then one day he comes up and says, listen, I think they're going to start selling stock. You got to buy some of this stuff, man. You don't understand. This company's going somewhere every day. You got to buy stock. This is going to be awesome. You really should. I'm taking all my money, all my overtime, and I'm buying stock in this company because I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like it. And I'm like, yeah. Do you know if I would have invested $2,000, I'd have $750 right now? But that opportunity is gone. I had an inside guy right there before they went public talking to me all the time, inside information. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be great. You should do it. You should do it. And you know what? I even remember a couple times sitting at work, said, you know what? That's probably true. They seem like they're growing. I'm going to do that. I'm going to get down there and do that. I think I'm going to just wonder how you buy stock anyways. I'm hungry. I'm going to 7-Eleven. Never did it. Are you this guy? Give me heat. Give me heat and I'll give you wood. That guy froze to death. Opportunities don't have to pass with Jesus. The window does not have to. He can remove the obstacles. And here's the last thing right in your notes, the bottom line. Jesus, give me something practical to work with. So you'll have to decide this week. It's the story about this woman that Jesus just gives one touch to and she gets up and she moves back into her responsibilities. If you're sick of making excuses, and remember, excuses are an attitude, has nothing to do with content. That's why when somebody comes to you and they have this airtight story and they lay it on you, it doesn't mean anything to you. Because you know it doesn't have anything to do with you. Because if I'm just trying to get out of trouble, it's just an excuse. But if I have a reason because I care about your trouble, then I can have responsibility.